That first reading, I think, is a lot more understandable if you know some of the kind of the historic details behind it. It takes place right at the end of what is known as the Babylonian captivity. Now, the Babylonian captivity was that time in about 580 B.C. when the leading people of Jerusalem, the leading craftsmen, the talented, skilled people, were deported to Babylon. Babylon had conquered them, and so they took those leading people to Babylon. And right at the end of that, right before it was the end, a new king comes to power by the name of Cyrus. Now, Cyrus was not Jew. He was not a believer in the true God. But he was a person that believed in conciliation. He believed that he could do better controlling his territory if he did things that pleased the people that were subject to him. And so he chose to send the Jewish people back to Jerusalem to rebuild their city and to rebuild the temple. Not only did he do that, but he sent money with them. He gave them financial assistance to carry out that goal. And when they had been conquered back in 580, the temple vessels had been brought to Babylon also. Well, he sent them back to Jerusalem. So he created a lot of goodwill with the people. And in that passage from Isaiah, he is beginning to say that he is God's instrument. Even though he doesn't know God, God has chosen to make him an instrument for the sake of the people of Judah, the people of Jerusalem. And gradually, as you can see also in that passage, they came to realize that this God that they had been worshiping was not only the God of the Jews, but he was the God of all nations. And that he could control all nations to do his will. Now, I'm going to let that reading aside. I want to go to the gospel reading. The gospel reading raises, in one sense, the question, is it lawful to pay tribute or tax to an unbelieving emperor? But that's really not what's going on in the gospel. The Pharisees, the Herodians, they're really not too concerned to know that. What they're wanting to do is set a trap for Jesus. Because the Pharisees and the Herodians didn't really like each other. But you know how it goes when you have a common enemy? It kind of brings you together. And they saw Jesus as the enemy. And so they were willing to come together and work together to try to get rid of him. And what they thought would happen is, if he said, yes, pay the temple tax, or the census tax, all the Jews who had been following him and listening to his word would be so upset that they would kind of write him off. But if he chose to say, don't pay the tax, then the Herodians, who basically believed in supporting the Roman authority, they would report him to the authorities as being an insurrectionist, as leading a rebellion. And, of course, the Romans were never very merciful to somebody leading a rebellion. He would probably have been executed. And so they were hoping to catch Jesus in that trap. Whatever he answered, they thought, he was in trouble. And so Jesus answers the way he does. Now, what is the message that you and I can take from that reading? I think there's many, but I'd like to focus on one piece, and that is the image on the coin. Remember what it says? Whose image is this? And they say, Caesar's. And then Jesus says, render to Caesar what belongs to Caesar. Now, taking that thought, I want to go back to the book of Genesis. Remember when in the story of creation, how it says, in the divine image he created them, male and female, he created them, saying that all of us, all members of the human family, have been created in the image of God. Therefore, in a sense, just as the coin belonged to Caesar because it had his image on it, we belong to God because the image of God has been, in a sense, stamped upon us or imprinted upon us. We have been created in his image. Now, let's go to the first letter of St. John, where St. John writes, God is love. And he who abides in love abides in God, and God in him. God is love. And so if you and I are in the image of God, that means somehow we are in the image of love. And we are called to be people who love. That is how we live in the image of God. By our capacity to love. By our giving of ourselves in love. The other thing of this that's so important is we're not forced to love. God gave us freedom. And, of course, freedom is necessary because you can't love by force. Love has to be a free will choice on our part. And so God created us to love, but he gave us freedom to choose whether we want to love or whether we don't want to love. And we can decide that I'm not going to love. I'm going to turn in on myself, and I'm going to make myself the center of my existence. That's a choice we have. You know, Adam and Eve had a similar choice. They could choose to follow what God asked them to do, or they could choose not to. Like Adam and Eve, the devil comes along for us too and begins to say to us, you would be happier if you didn't do what God asked you to do. You'd be happier if you turned in on yourself. And so often we fall for it. We begin to think, doing what God asked me to do right now isn't reasonable. It won't make me happy. I'd prefer to do it another way. That choice is always ours. See, what happens there is really a lack of trust. That's what happened to Adam and Eve. They no longer trusted that God was being honest with them. You know, the devil kind of tells them, if you were to eat, you would be like God yourself. And God doesn't want you to be there. And so they lost trust that God was being honest with them. And we do the same thing when we sin. We lose trust that God's will, God's law, God's plan for us is really for our well-being. And we begin to think, I know a better way. I know how I can be happy. I don't have to do it God's way. And that's the option that is before each and every one of us. Are we going to trust God and become people who live in the image of God and strive to love, strive to give of ourselves in service to others? Or are we going to be people who focus on ourselves, become much more self-centered, and turn inward? That's our choice. The love that God asks of us is not usually the big heroic things. It's much more likely to be the small things. If you're married, do I give of myself to my spouse? Have I made of myself a gift to that person? Do I give of myself to my children, my grandchildren? Do I serve the people around me who are in any kind of need? Do I put their welfare before my welfare? Or their convenience before mine? These are really the choices that we face each day. They're little things, and yet, that's what love is all about. It's giving of ourselves in little ways. And it's giving of ourselves in little ways that may someday prepare us for that very heroic act of love. But we have to make that choice. Do I want to live in the image of God, or do I want to turn inward and become my own law? Turn my love inward on myself. That's our choice. And our eternity rests upon that. Do I choose to live in God's image, or do I not? Do I choose to love? Do I choose to focus on me?